This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Davy Rothbart writes as though every stranger could be a new friend. Every girl he meets may be his next love, and the open road stretches on for miles. For the past 10 years, Davy's been publishing Found magazine. He prints strangers' love notes, homework, to-do lists, and doodles. And now he has a new book out called My Heart is an Idiot. And after a decade of publishing other people's private thoughts and experiences, he thought it was time for him to share his own. Tonight he's going to be reading at Flyleaf Books in Chapel Hill. Tomorrow he'll be performing at the Casbah in Durham. But right now he's on the State of Things. Davy Rothbart, welcome. Good to have you here.
Thanks.
Let's start with the title, My Heart is an Idiot. What goes on in these essays?
The book is 16 personal essays, true life tales. You know, a lot of them are stories about love and relationships, my own misadventures in that arena. A lot of them, too, are about interesting strangers I've met over the last 10 years traveling around the country. You know, I was out headed to the Grand Canyon for the first time, and I saw this guy, this old guy hitchhiking, maybe 75 years old. I picked him up, and he told me his story. He was from Boston. He worked his whole life in a factory, and he said his lifelong dream was to visit the Grand Canyon. And so a few weeks before at work, the guys were giving him a hard time. They said, shut up. You know, you're always talking about going to the Grand Canyon. You're never going to go there. Stop, you know, stop talking about it. It's depressing. He said that he quit on the spot. He turned in his tools, walked out, and a few weeks later was on a bus headed west. Now, here's a guy whose lifelong dream is to visit the Grand Canyon. I'm lucky enough to pick him up and deliver, you know, be with him the last 2 hours before he realizes this dream, be there to witness this moment as he looks over the canyon for the first time, thrusts his fist in the air. And so meeting that guy, his name was John Malloy, was meaningful to me. And so many of the stories in the book are about just interesting strangers that have come into my life in the most serendipitous ways and really changed me in some way.
Well, the idiot in your heart seems to be idiotic, seems to be willing to put you in harm's way in order to get the great story. Is there a sense that you have that the danger here is worth the story that this is going to yield?
Yeah, I think for a lot of us, you know, so many people have come up to me this fall as we've been traveling around on this 79-city tour that I'm on with my brother Peter, and they've said, you know what, my heart's an idiot too. And I think it is there's something universal about it. You know, maybe we fall in love with the person that we're never going to get. Maybe we fall in love at first sight without really knowing that person and are let down. There's many ways that our hearts can be idiots, and I think I explore plenty of them in this book.
Well, you know, the sadness, the sorrow for me is when your heart's too smart. When you refuse to take the journey or take that next step out of fear that something bad might happen and not develop the story and find out who you are and get to the darn Grand Canyon before you die.
Exactly. I think it's so important to take chances, whether in love or in general, just engaging with strangers, the guy sitting on the next bar stool, the person sitting next to you on the Greyhound bus, getting to know their stories and getting to, you know, find out who is this woman or man that, you know, you're attracted to, what is their story, and is there a connection for us?
So speaking of man on the Greyhound bus, we've got several, but one of them takes you to Buffalo, New York, my hometown.
Yes.
And you traveled places I even recognize, and I wonder if you'd read. Tell me a little bit about the story and then read from it.
Sure. The story is called Human Snowball, and yeah, it's about this girl that I knew back in Michigan. My hometown is Ann Arbor, and I met her, I thought we had a future together, and I went to Buffalo to explore that possibility. So I'll read you the opening of the story, Human Snowball. This is the second story in My Heart is an Idiot. Here we go. On February 14th, 2000, I took the Greyhound bus from Detroit to Buffalo to visit a girl named Lauryn Hill. Not Lauryn Hill the singer, who did that cover of Killing Me Softly, but another Lauryn Hill who'd gone to my high school and now, almost 10 years later, was about to become my girlfriend, I hoped. I'd seen her at a party when she was home in Michigan over the holidays, and we'd spent the night talking and dancing. Around 4 in the morning, when the party closed down, we'd kissed for about 12 minutes out on the street, as thick, heavy snowflakes swept around us, melting on our eyebrows and eyelashes. She'd left town the next morning, and in the 6 weeks since, we'd traded a few soulful letters and had two very brief, awkward phone conversations. As Valentine's Day came near, I didn't know if I should send her flowers, call her, not call her, or what. I thought it might be romantic to just show up at her door and surprise her. So I do that. In the story, you know, I hop on a Greyhound bus, and adventures ensue.
Let me just say the adventure begins for me. Any sentence that includes the words Greyhound bus, Detroit, and Buffalo.
I mean, absolutely.
This has got to be a great story or the saddest story in the world.
Riding buses is all, you're always open to adventure. There's a couple stories, you're right. There's a couple in the book that involve Greyhound buses. And we'll come back to Human Snowball, but there's one, New York, New York, which was in the aftermath of September 11th when I was, you know, living in Chicago and working for This American Life and was sent to New York to report on September 11th. And the story really is about the interesting people I shared that bus ride with. But Human Snowball, yeah, I go there. I go to the bar hoping to see Lauryn Hill. And
wait, why did you think that would be that surprise idea, that visit would be a good
because
idea?
My heart's an idiot, Frank. I mean, sometimes you think some grand gesture is what's going to help capture someone's heart. Of course, sometimes that's too much. So I went to the bar where she was working on Valentine's Day, hoping she'd see me. Her face would light up. You're here. This is amazing. It's Valentine's Day. Let's be together for the rest of our lives. That's not what happened.
No. First of all, it's a very noisy place. So it's a Monday night in Buffalo at a bar. So anybody, you know, any reasonable human being might think could be a little quiet. Except you're in Buffalo, New York. The bars are never quiet.
Not at all. This place was pretty rowdy. Yep. And I was in Buffalo with two guys. One was this old guy who was, he claimed to be 110 years old.
Who
I had met on the bus. He was sitting next to me on the bus, sharing his flask with me. You know, we hit it off. He had gone to Buffalo to try to make amends with his great-granddaughter, who he was on, you know, rocky terms with. And so I made friends with this guy, Vernon. And then the friend who picked me up is a guy named Chris Henderson, who was a guy I'd met also in serendipitous ways. Remember when you used to call these phone reservation lines to buy your plane tickets over the phone? So I'd kind of hit it off with him over the phone. He came to Chicago many times to visit me because his dream was being a stand-up comic. Well, this guy, Chris, he also his real job is stealing cars and selling them, you know, breaking them up into parts with his brother. But this was the only guy I knew in Buffalo. So he said he would pick me up at the bus station, take me to the bar to see Lauryn Hill. Things didn't work out with her, but Chris and Vernon and I roamed around Buffalo and kind of had a series of adventures that, to me, paid off in an important way.
Well, it's a delightful story, and there's a kind of Confederacy of Dunces quality as all of these characters accumulate, and you traipse through the winter landscape of Buffalo, New York, which is a kind of a bleak thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Except for
the
people, and that's the light in the hill, which we won't give it away, but it's a charming, charming
Exactly.
Kind of
you know what's funny about this tour is that as we've been traveling around doing these events, and you mentioned tonight we're going to be at Flyleaf Books, me and my brother Peter, reading from Found Magazine, from This American Life, and from My Heart is an Idiot, Flyleaf Books tonight at 7 o'clock in Chapel Hill. And then tomorrow night is the last night of our 79-city tour. We're going to be in Durham at a place called the Casbah, 8 o'clock tomorrow night. Both will be really fun, energetic shows. But what's been interesting is getting to meet the characters from this book. We've gotten to see them as we've roamed around the country. I mean, I say characters, they're all real people. Yeah. So in Brooklyn, we saw this guy, Hakeem. There's a story in here called Canada or Bust. And we saw Hakeem. He surprised us at the show. Lauryn Hill was in Denver, where she lives now, and we got to hang out with her. So
does she love you now that you're famous? Maybe you're on the state of things. Maybe that'll
I'll send her the link to this, and we'll see if that changes her mind. You know, we have remained good, even if it didn't work out with her at the time. We've remained good, really good friends.
Your brother, I should say, is a musician, and he will be on later and is part of our music segment here on The State of Things, and he's part of the tour. Your last book was fictional. Why memoir this time?
You know, I wrote a couple of autobiographical pieces for The Believer magazine, and I really had a fun time with those. And, you know, I love personal storytelling, whether it's This American Life, whether it's documentary films. I love it as a medium in general. You know, my favorite books, a lot of them are you know, Jim Carroll's Basketball Diaries and Forced Entries. And I always find myself relating to the specifics of someone's story, even though that, you know, that's not my exact experience, just the emotions behind it. I always relate to it. So I really enjoyed writing them. It felt natural, and the stories just, they kind of came out.
You appear fearless, and there's a couple of stories in this book that we've chosen not to talk about because once we get into detail, it's going to make it a difficult conversation on the radio.
Fair enough.
But they appear fearless. Now, is there a way, let me ask you this honestly, is there a way in which all of that honesty, getting it all out there, things that would embarrass a lot of us, do you feel you're revealing or are you concealing something? Is there a way to hide behind all of that honesty?
That's a really good question. And I don't know if I'm completely authorized to answer that. And just, you know, I don't, that's a really good question. I mean, I think I like the most honest books, you know, and I like, well, it's something I've always loved about these found notes in Found magazine. You know, these are notes and letters that were found on the street, found blown on the ground, and people reveal themselves in such raw and intimate ways in these notes because they never expected anyone else to read it. Here I did expect other people to read these, but I guess I'm just not one for small talk, and I feel like I always like opening myself up and being honest. Why not put it all out on the line? What's been interesting too about this tour in the fall, the last 3 months, is that people have read the book now. They've read My Heart is an Idiot, and they've come up to me at the events, and they kind of give me this funny look. They're like, hey, I think I read your book. And they give me this sort of sly smile. And I'm saying, well, you know a lot about me. And they're like, yeah, I really do.
Right.
But actually, they've felt moved to open themselves up to me because I've shared so much of this stuff. People have told me that the stories have resonated with them, but they also feel comfortable opening up to me. And I've really enjoyed the conversations I've had with people after our events.
It's an interesting phenomenon because it will certainly have that effect. And people then have permission to talk about things that have been secrets to them and oppressive because of it. But I wonder, because I've known people who talk that way.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, they're telling you like way too much and you're thinking, wow, how can you? And the longer you get to know them, you realize there's this other secret. And once you find that out, they'd be really destroyed if you knew that little thing, which the rest of us wouldn't be bothered by.
It's a really interesting insight. I am sure that there is there's something to that, and there may be some things I'm concealing, but I don't know if it would destroy me.
Yeah. It's just an interesting thought. I wondered if it had occurred to you, because clearly you think a lot about yourself, and these stories are wonderfully wrought.
Thank you.
And so sometimes those insights kind of pop up. Let's talk more about Found magazine. What was behind that? What was your idea behind Found magazine?
You know, I just always loved, you know, I guess I'm interested in strangers, and I like getting a peek into other people's lives. And when you find a note on the ground, blowing down the street, on the floor of the city bus, in a bowling alley parking lot, they really give you this powerful insight into the people we share the world with. And some of them are poignant. Some of them are hilarious. I brought a couple that I'll share in a moment, but I just thought, wouldn't it be great for everyone to share what they're finding with everybody else? Because so many of my friends had begun to find these kinds of notes and letters. I'll give you a couple examples.
All right.
And here's one from North Carolina. I thought you guys might appreciate it. I think found in Winston-Salem. It's written to a guy named Ron. And this old woman just found this on the street in front of her house. It says, "Dear Ron, the longer I think about what I'm doing, the sicker I feel. Ron, I'm sorry, but I don't think we should continue to have a relationship together, at least not as a couple. I love you, but things have not been the same since we found out that we were related." I hate when that happens.
Whoa.
It goes on from there. It's crazy. It says, if you no longer want to speak to me, I'll understand. I'll still come visit you. I just don't know what to say. Love always, Alicia. And so, you know, my friends helped me open up all the found mail that we get. We get about 10 or 20 things mailed into us every day. And my friend Adrian, I remember she read this one, burst into laughter, you know, passed it to me. I was laughing, but you know, we were thinking about it. It's so hard to find true love in this world. You know, it's so hard to find that one special someone. How bad would that, you know, how rough would that really be? You finally find them and it's your cousin.
Right.
Or your sister.
Although, if it was your long-lost sister, that would be a great discovery all by itself.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, you know, it does seem like love and relationships are on a lot of people's minds.
Yeah.
Because so many of the notes that people find and send into us seem to involve this kind of thing. This is one, it's interesting. It was found in Portland, Oregon. And it seems like it's a guy who is counseling his friend who's in the early, early stages of a relationship. He's just trying to give him some advice. So he says, "Don't rush things. Be her friend first. Take her out for lunch. Ask her, 'Would you like to go out for lunch? My treat. Please. Come on, please.'" So I like, Frank, how he's like anticipating rejection for his friend before he's even really had a chance.
And you know, and almost falling in love with his friend's lover himself. You can almost feel
You're exactly right, because each found note is the tip of the iceberg. Yeah. There's such a giant story behind each one, and it's really up to you to fill in the blanks. That's the magic of it to me, is the way it sparks your imagination.
Are you tempted to turn these into novels or short stories?
Absolutely. I mean, I think any found note in Found magazine or in the Found books is amazing material that can be mined, you know, because it is such, you know, raw, unselfconscious human expression. People, you know, the combination of emotion and story never ceases to amaze me. We have a website, foundmagazine.com, and every day we post a new favorite find on there, our favorite that we received the day before. And I look at the new finds, and they kind of blow your mind. Some of them are really quite poignant. Many of them are hilarious. Some of them, a little bit of each.
Do you worry now that you are known and this is a thing, this is you've created this artifact, that people are faking them up just to get them in?
It's a fair question. It's the one rule we have is that they must really be written. They must really be found. So I think people respect that. And, you know, people might joke around about inventing them. Found magazine only comes out once a year. So to actually take the time to write it, weather the paper so it looks found, send it in, wait a year and a half to see it. I don't know if anyone would go that far, but the truth is that, you know, truth is far, far stranger than fiction. And the real stuff you will find once you start looking for it is so much more beautiful, mystical, weird, cryptic, bizarre, you know, than anything you can make up.
Has going over these every day given you an insight into whether texting, kind of digital communication, is changing the way we leave notes?
And that's a great question, too. I mean, definitely as technology evolves, the ways that people communicate evolves, but the ways that you can find stuff also evolves. For example, people might print out an email and lose that, you know, and someone might find that on the street or on the bus and send it to us. People send emails to the wrong email address. A guy told me his name is John Williams, and he has a common name and a common Gmail address. He gets dozens of emails a week for other John Williamses. So he collected, you know, it's not necessarily about the blowing down the street part of the find. It's about getting that glimpse into someone else's life.
The wonderful thing about the tangible media here is its location, kind of where it was found.
And the handwriting is always so expressive. So that always is an interesting part of it.
Do you have another one there?
Yeah. This one came from Austin, Texas. And the college campuses are great places to find stuff. We've gotten a lot of great stuff from Chapel Hill and Durham over the years. I'll share some of that tonight and tomorrow night at our events. But this one came from Austin, University of Texas. It says, Jenna, can I give you a sensual massage? Then I will talk about Jesus.
Ah.
pretty. I'm like, you know, my shoulders are sore. I could use some spiritual guidance. Where is this guy when you need him?
Exactly. We'll talk about anything after that. Exactly. The Found magazine has really gathered quite a following. Why do you suppose that is?
I think, you know, is it voyeuristic? Yes, absolutely. But I think a certain degree of voyeurism is healthy. And I think it's natural. You know, we're surrounded by strangers all the time, walking down the street, sitting on the bus. I think it's natural for all of us, you know, to be curious about what other people's experience of being human is like, you know. And that's what these notes give you in such a potent way. And I think people really respond to the truth of these notes. You know, my mom describes Found magazine. She says it's like reality TV but real, which I think is kind of a good way to describe it. And right. Another friend of mine says it's like people watching on paper.
Well, it's, you know what it is? There's meaning in it, and that's, I think, what we're all hungry for. And the interesting thing about the fragment is the meaning we bring to it when we start filling in the story, don't you think?
Absolutely. And the personal meaning. You know, sometimes you might be dealing with something in your life, and it's really difficult, and you feel really alone in it. You're like, you know, nobody could possibly understand what I'm going through right now. Well, to read a note by a stranger in Found magazine, or, you know, just blows up on the street in front of you, to read something and see that a stranger is going through the same stuff as you, is really meaningful and makes you feel connected to that stranger, whoever they are, you know, by extension, kind of to all people, and just makes you feel less alone.
Well, we'll see how connected you are to your brother, who's at the end of a 79-city tour. He's on next as we talk with the Rothbards today. Davey, his new book is called My Heart is an Idiot, and 10 Years of Found magazine as well. He's here to celebrate all of that. Going to be reading at Flyleaf Books tonight at 7 o'clock, tomorrow at the Casbah. Coming up next, we're going to hear music from the guy who spent 24 hours a day with Davey for the past 3 months, musician Peter Rothbard. Stay tuned.